Thinking about history makes me wonder how I'll fit into it one day, I guess. And you too. I kind of wish people still wrote like that. History, huh? Bet we can make some.
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We're bringing you all of the internet's favorite books and letting you know whether you should take your time to read them or whether the internet's just gaslighting you into a marketing scheme. I'm Caitlin.
I'm Catherine.
And I'm Casey. Today we are reading the longtime Book Talk famous book, Red, White, and Royal Blue, which has since been turned into a popular movie. And it's a rom-com, and the two protagonists are the first son of the United States, so his mom is the president, and the Prince of England. And so he's like the quote-unquote spare in his family dynamic in this like mythical version of the U.S. / Britain. And yeah, it kind of follows them, their relationship. And also there's a lot of like political stuff, and like there's an election that takes place in the U.S. in the course of the book. And like they talk about the queen and, you know, having two queer guys be in such public facing roles. So, yeah, that's basically what the book's about. Do you guys have any reviews?
Yes. I found a very funny one-star review. It's on Goodreads. And in parentheses, it goes, Ryan Atwood's voice. You know what I like about rich kids? Nothing.
I have several reviews, and that was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
I have two. I'll read the four-star first. It says, this book is by no means the greatest book ever, nor even the greatest romance or queer book ever, but it's cute and sweet and easy and just overall a lot of fun in all its fan fiction-esque ways. My emphasis being on fan fiction-esque.
Yes.
Yes.
but here's a one star that made me chuckle. For the life of me, I cannot recall how this book came onto my read list, but it was not for me. More of the Lifetime Channel meets Teen Beat magazine demographic. Unless I missed it, but it should be in the young adults reading section.
I don't know about that one.
I was like,
I'm like, sir, what part of this gave you young adult?
Yeah, that it did not serve young adult to me.
No,
this is a spicy.
Yeah. Okay, I have 2 1-stars that both kind of made me chuckle. The first one, this book is unbearably cheesy and possesses zero literary merit, like reading Tumblr tag meta, but worse. I'm horrified that it was called exquisite by the New York Times, which has clearly fallen into disrepute.
Oh. I'm surprised the New York Times called it exquisite.
I am also surprised the New York Times called it exquisite. But just the way the New York Times in disrepute, I just...
Yeah, I hate that person so much.
I think she was kind of making a joke. I mean, we hope, fingers crossed, but whatever.
Yeah, if she was unironically saying that, then I have problems.
Yeah. And then my second one star, this one is like kind of pretty close to like my perspective on the book. But it's, I'm not going to feel bad for rich assholes that actively profit off a system of oppression just because they're big sad.
Oh, you kind of did write that on your Goodreads.
Yep. You did.
Yep. Very reminiscent of my own review. Anyway, per usual, the book is much more highly rated by the general audience than our 1-star reviews. The overall Goodreads rating is 4.1 out of 5, and the overall Amazon rating is 4.5 out of 5. What did you guys think?
I'm going to start because I am the highest review because I've seen all of our Goodreads reviews, and I think you guys have too. I gave it 5 stars. It's not because I think this is a literary genius or the top of the romantic comedy section. It's just this book gives me good vibes. And I read it very many years ago when it was like first getting popular before the movie came out. And I think I read it because the movie was coming out and I really liked the actors in the movie. And I liked it then. It came at a good like time in my life when I really needed a pick me up, and it gave me a pick me up. And then I reread it for this podcast. And again, It's a good pick me up book. It's candy. It's really just for that fan fiction girly that just really loves these kind of like improbable romances. And I mean, I think that's just, it hit a spot for me. So I like, y'all are going to dig on this book. I know you are. I'm not going to fight you on it because I don't disagree with either of you. It's just, it gives me something that I needed.
I am not going to dig on the book. I gave it a 3 and I just, it was fun. It was cute. It was fine. Not my best romance ever. I think the author had great writing and she was pretty funny. I just think the book was a little longer than it needed to be, in my opinion. And all the rising action was in the wrong places. And also, I was not a fanfic girly. So it was so very unrealistic. I could not even get on board with it. it was like watching a Netflix rom-com, and which I guess it is anyway. Also, I'm sorry, I'm not a gay man. So the romance did not scratch my itch.
That's fair. I'll out myself. I was a fanfic girly. So.
So I also gave it 3 stars. I want to preface this by saying I'm absolutely going to shred this book. But a big part of my issue with it is that I just work in political journalism. Like, I work in Washington, D.C., and there are parts of this book that actually I could not stomach. And I don't think I would have felt that way if I didn't have my job. So my opinion of this book is like heavily influenced by just working in this space. But the outright just like unapologetic nepotism that was passed off as like empowerment, like, oh my God, my mom's the president and we're all going to work on her campaign. I was like, this is just like actually just the cringiest bullshit I've ever read in my life. Like, you're just a nepo baby. It doesn't matter if you're gay, you're straight, what color you are just a nepo baby. And you're not exceptional just because your mom is the president, and it doesn't mean you're talented. And I don't care about your problems. Like, I was so mad at the way this book portrayed politics because, I'm sorry, he is a very privileged boy whose dad is a senator and whose mom is the president of the United States. I can totally understand why in many ways that would make being queer very difficult. I'm not trying to take away from that, like, part of the book. But his just, like, total disregard for like his position in the world, and he's like working on his mommy's campaign and he's like, oh, I can't wait to like work my way up the ladder. I was like, can you just pull your head out of your ass? Like, your mommy is giving you a job. That's not cool. And I just felt like this book just like hit so tone deaf, because if any other politician did that, like, we would not think it was cute. And so yeah, I'm like really mad at this book.
Yeah, damn. Yeah,
very. Despite both giving it 3 stars, these are very different 3-star ratings.
Yeah. Yes.
Because
I give most romances, rom-coms I read 3 stars because they're cute, but whatever.
Yeah. I mean, there are other things with the book. It's like there's a point in the book where it becomes unbelievable to a degree that I just could not also like deal with. I thought it was boring. I still gave it 3 stars because I thought the characters were cute. I thought the romance aspect of the book itself was fine. It's just that like, I felt like this author was trying to write like an inclusive, empowering story, and she just like served rich bullshit. And so, yeah.
Yeah. To be fair, though, a lot of nepotism in politics. So that's very believable.
It's extremely believable. But I was like, I'm sorry, I'm not falling in love with your queer love story for 2 millionaires who didn't work for it. Like, get over yourself.
Fair. Just wanted to point that out. Though.
You know what? Let me say, it read extremely Prince Harry. So that was very accurate.
I was going to say, after reading Spare, this book was very interesting.
Oh, you best believe I have a question in our discussion question that's very related to that.
Oh, dear. We all hate that book.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, well, if you can mindlessly read politics, I'm sure that you will be totally fine with this book. But I was like, I could not do it.
Well, it was an idealized version of politics, let's be real.
And our ideal fantasy version,
girlfriend.
It was fantasy. Yes.
Fantasy. And also, I'm sorry, in our fantasy, do the children of presidents grow up and become a political operative based on experience off their mom's campaign?
I just could not.
I can't. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I get it. I'm not going to defend the book, to be fair. It scratched an itch I wanted scratched.
Still itching. more plot or character driven before we get to all the area where Casey can rant.
It's hard.
I'll jump in and say I thought plot, because the entire plot is trying to, it's the love story and then trying to figure out how to make it work. And there is a good amount of like character in it, but ultimately I just think this whole story without the plot would be dumb as rocks.
Yeah, I think you're right, because a lot of plot points are the reason why things get more and more chaotic. So I do think it is more plot driven. But I mean, any love story has a character driven component to it because it requires two people falling in love.
Yeah.
I agree with that. I agree with Caitlin. This book felt too long to me. And I think part of the reason that is because I don't think there was a good balance between plot and character. I felt like there were times where there was just absolutely no plot at all. And then times where the plot was like really, really intense, followed by periods where there was like no plot again. So it just didn't feel super well spaced to me. But I think overall it was like ultimately like plot driven.
Have you or would you read other books by Casey McQuiston, who is a very popular author, especially on social media and especially for the queer community?
I have not. I mean, I might. If another one of her books was more highly rated, maybe. I don't know.
I think I'm probably okay. I don't think that surprises anyone.
I could be persuaded. Like I said, I enjoyed the witty writing. It wasn't the writing that was the issue for me, but I just haven't found one that's popped up that's caught my interest. So,
right.
What about, okay, so you kind of started in on the pacing of the book. I mentioned I thought it was a little long. Let's get more into that. How was it? How long did it take you to read?
I'm not a romance reader. If you've ever listened to this podcast before, you already know that about me. I think it took me a week and a half to read this book, and there were parts that I just kind of skimmed over. Like, it just didn't hold my interest. And I thought it was cute. I just think it would have, like, been better if it was 100 pages shorter. I think some of the, like, time where they were just, like, hanging out and getting to know each other was like a little extra. I also thought there were a lot of like unnecessary sex scenes that just didn't feel like they were meaningful. And like also weren't particularly spicy. Like no, like I'm not mad at like a fade to black sex scene, but also that felt like there were a lot of them like back to back.
I was surprised there were. By that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was surprised at how graphic the before leading up to the sex scene was, but that it would fade to black. That was quite surprising for a romance.
It had me doing math in my head because I'm not a gay man. I was like, and then it would fade to black. I was like, well, I'll never know. But I agree with a lot of that. I think sometimes there were way too many friggin' email correspondence thingies happening. I was like, okay, they're very romantic and cute, but like, let's move on. Let's go. And also, like, you said a lot of it was the romance building up. And then there were like two major like points of, I don't know, like high points in the plot at the very end, because you ended up with there's a scandal at the end and then there's an election at the end. And I was like, oh, my God, I feel like we have gotten to this rising and now we can't come down. And it just ended. I was like, whoa. I need you to calm down here at the end. We could have done with one and not both of those. And that's where it got to feel long. Is I was like, oh my God, another huge plot point.
It does read long. And I think I liked the emails because I thought it was cute correspondence. And I thought it gave me new perspectives on different things. We'll get into that more in the spoiler section. But yes, I agree. The pacing was not great. But I read it in 2 days because I actually was interested in the characters. I liked the characters and I had the time to sit down and just read. I will say there were parts I skimmed. I'm not going to lie. Most romance books, that's kind of what I do, is where I'm half reading sometimes.
Do we really trust her opinion then?
Yeah, don't trust my opinion. Honestly, I think this whole episode is going to be don't trust my opinion because I have nothing to defend this book. It's just kind of like it hit a moment where I wanted to
read it. How often do we do books that are just like, that was my comfort read. I loved it. And you guys are like, you're stupid. Yes.
Now it's my turn for this to happen.
Yeah, it's fair. And we read Tender and the Flesh in case he's like, this is my comfort read.
Oh, God.
It's a book about like Ivy League creative writing program where this woman is like devolving into a mental hysteria. And I'm like, this is my comfort read.
Yeah.
We all have our comfort reads. And yes, this took me a whole 7 days. I didn't say that. It took me a full week to read, but I read every word. I did not skim. See, now I'm just going at Catherine because she never gets to be the one that's picked on.
Hey, I'm here. I'll take it.
It's funny. Okay, so would you watch a movie or TV show of the book? And it's already a movie, so easier to answer.
Yes, I watched it when it came out, and then I watched it again after I finished it this week. And I like the movie.
I actually am open to the movie because I heard they kind of get less into the overall politics of it.
They do.
And that was like my major gripe is I just feel like the privilege of the two characters was portrayed in a tone deaf way. And if the book didn't have that, I think I could have a cutesy time, right? Like it's never going to be a 5-star read for me, but I think I wouldn't be so hard on it without that. And so I don't know. I'd watch the movie. I'm not against it.
I'd maybe watch it. I did see a review, though, saying June's not in the movie, so that definitely
she is not. Pushed
me towards not watching it. What the heck?
He's in the movie, he's an only sibling, and his parents are not divorced.
Well, I like June. So
I know.
I'm a little salty.
Unpopular opinion. They should have cut Nora from the book. Anyway.
They basically give Nora's character June's personality traits as well.
Yeah. I was like, I just don't think you need both of them.
I agree with that.
But okay, now we're to our busy girl rating.
I mean, I think I have to give it a 5 because it was paced well for me enough to read it. It's a comfort read for me. So we'll get that out of the way while you all rip into it.
No, I'll give it a 4. I think it was an easy read. I think it could have been paced a little better. And I think while it was a cute romance, it's not necessarily everybody's cup of tea. So I'll give it a 4.
I'm going to stick with a 3. I just think there's romances that are better. I mean, that's really it. I think it's easy to read, but I think there's more captivating romances and particularly more captivating queer romances. So,
oh, for sure. There are way better queer romances out there. This is just candy.
All right. Well, this is our spoiler alert section. You know, it's a rom-com, so there aren't necessarily a ton of spoilers because there has to be a happy ending. But there is a lot of random stuff that happens to these characters along the way, mostly in the last chapter of the book. But go read it or watch the movie or both and then come back and listen to our discussion. First question is, what do you think of Alex and Henry?
I mean, I do like that it was in Alex's perspective. I think this would have been way too much if it was both Alex and Henry's perspectives and we'd flip back and forth, because that seems to be a vibe a lot of authors are going with lately. And I think it's to the detriment of the book sometimes. I think this was good that we just had Alex's perspective. I think it gave Henry a little more depth because he has a lot of internal thoughts that he doesn't put out in the world because he's the potential future king of England. So I liked that aspect of Alex's character. I do think he got a little whiny and very for supposedly a very smart kid. He comes off as very dumb, like the fact that he was like, am I bi? And I'm like, honey, if you're having like romantic partnerships with men before you even considered this, yes. I don't know how that journey goes, though, because I'm straight. But I was kind of like, Yeah, if you're making out with boys when you're in high school, I think you can consider that as your, yes, you have some sort of like degree of the LGBTQ spectrum. So, yeah, I think that was the one thing where I was just like, Alex, you're kind of an idiot. Henry, on the other hand, I think he was, for a princeling, I think he was a pretty well-rounded character. And I think I was interested in him and how he came about his sexual identity in a world that like was very discouraging of it. And I think that's parts of the books was I was the most interested in was like the British royal family, not necessarily the American political system, because that part I know pretty well. And yes, I agree with Casey. It was unbelievable in this book to where like I was just like, I'm just not gonna go into it. But with the British royal family, I don't understand it because it's a very tight knit thing. So I could totally believe that they would, you know, try to keep someone in the closet.
So I actually really enjoyed Alex's like queer awakening, because I think that's probably how some people are when they don't have the option to be queer. Like, he never thought it was an option for him, and then he was like, oh shit, yep, totally was bi. I don't know, I found that part to be like the funnier parts of the book, especially like when they end up in the mop closet together and stuff, and you're like, yep, he doesn't know it yet, but he likes boys. That was the parts I thought were funny, and I enjoyed that part. Alex, I liked a lot more in the beginning than I did in the end. I thought he got kind of overbearing and single track minded towards the end. And just, I think this is where it got really unbelievable for me. He was just so very reckless, as like, you're not going to slip security and do all that all the time, and it's going to turn out perfectly okay. Like, that's just, I don't know. It was a cute romance. I think I liked Henry better, but maybe because we didn't hear his thoughts in his head all the time. I don't know. But he seemed very like Darcy-esque, if Darcy was a gay royal.
Yeah, that tracks.
I don't know. I think some of the best parts of both of them were actually their supporting characters.
Oh, yeah. Their families were the best part.
Yeah, I really liked Alex. I thought that he was also just like a great representative for the queer community, because he wasn't super queer coded. Like, I think it was a great example of just a normal person being queer, which is, you know, how a lot of queer people are. And then Henry, though, I found so bland, like so British. I mean, just zero personality except for a few romantic, cheesy lines in a poem. Like, I really did not get their connection. I think that's one of the bigger failings of the book to me, is like, okay, so there's all this like sexual tension in the beginning. Then they like start their sexual relationship, and then I felt like the relationship was all sex, and then all of a sudden they're in love. Like, I just didn't feel it. I didn't feel the connection between them, and I didn't really love Henry. Also, I found them both super whiny, and I think it gets worse as the book goes on. So, I mean, I thought they were fine. I did like Alex, though. I loved that he was from Texas. I actually thought the representation of Texas outside of the election was really good, because a lot of the book's like complaints with the way people see Texas are things that I also talk about. So I really actually believed that this author had a great grasp on Texas and then like a horrible grasp on politics, because I have one small thing that I just want to say at the beginning. It is like political 101 to not put things in emails.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you. The second they started emailing, I was like,
I was like, these are going to leak. Yeah.
Yes. Email servers.
Yep. I knew it immediately. And yes, lots of people are still dumb and reckless in politics and don't believe it will happen to them. So I'm not like even totally against the fact that they do emails anyway. The parts that like really stretched my belief were the fact that they made the emails so graphic, and also that they virtually never think about the security risk of like, these are two of the most high powered children, most high profile families in the world. Like, not an exaggeration, the most high profile children of politicians in the world. And they don't even think for a second about not putting this in an email. That alone was so unbelievable to me, because even as a journalist, we get debriefings about how to conduct ourselves in emails. Every time you write an email, you have to assume it will be public.
Yeah.
Emails are not secure, are routinely hacked. It's a small detail that really bothered me.
I think, and I don't know how y'all will feel when I say this, I think the whole point of the email server was, one, a way to do letters in the modern age, mm-hmm. and two, to make an email server joke after the 2016 election, because that was what was taboo in the 2016 election, was Hillary Clinton's emails. And they make multiple references to email servers and how mm-hmm. that could cost someone an election. And I'm like, this feels a little on the nose, but okay.
Yeah. I'm also just going to put it out there, since we're talking about Texas. Catherine is in love with this book because they're from Austin.
Yes. Oh my God. They mentioned so many things that I grew up with, like the Highland.
I was reading this. I was like, Catherine's eating this up.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. That is a portion of my star count. Yes.
One whole star for Austin right there.
Yes. Cause this author obviously has been to Austin, understands Austin, and understands its people, because Alex Claremont Diaz is an Austinite, and you can totally tell throughout the entirety of the book that he's an Austinite. And the fact that he has a lake house or a ranch house on the Highland Lakes near Lake LBJ. All of it was just kind of me going through my childhood. This is literally what I experienced when I was a kid in Texas, was just going to these places, seeing these things. So yes, I will admit I'm a very easy person to please when you mention my home city.
Right. So, this leads well into our next question, which is about tropes. Because I do want to say, I still liked the trope of love letters. Actually, one of my favorite parts of the book was them exploring a little bit of queer history and these love letters from ancient figures who were not even necessarily ancient, but just, pre-huge LGBTQ movement politicians.
Had Eleanor Roosevelt in there.
Roosevelt. Yeah. Yep. I was like, that's my girl. Right. But I really liked that. And I liked the sort of historical, incorporating that into the story, and kind of the fact that these political love stories aren't really new. And I liked them sort of positioning themselves as another piece of history. And I liked the romantic callbacks. I thought the old love letters were beautiful. And so I'm not even against the emails. I just feel like it could have been approached in a believable manner, and it was not.
Also could have been spaced out more, because there were points where we had 10 back-to-back emails and I was like, okay.
Yep. I would have liked it more if it was a chapter separator. At the end of every chapter we got an email exchange.
Yeah. I did the forbidden romance trope. I feel like a lot of people don't touch that anymore because Romeo mm-hmm. and Juliet feels cliche. Yeah. But I liked this premise, no matter how unrealistic it is. A lot of people want a fairy tale. This is a fairy tale. It is a prince falling in love with a forbidden romance, and mm-hmm. that's what you get. So I did like the forbidden love trope.
I agree.
Yeah. I'd like a Disney Channel movie, except the Disney Channel wouldn't have made two queer kids when we were growing up.
It definitely reads Disney Channel.
So was giving me Princess mm-hmm. Protection Program.
I liked the enemies to lovers in the sense that it kind of turned the enemies to lovers trope on its head, because neither of them were really enemies. They were just kind of
repressed.
They were depressed. They were going through some shit, and they had a bad first start meeting, but even then they still had these feelings for each other. It was quite obvious that they were going to be more to each other than they thought they were, and that it wasn't actually an enemy relationship, which I thought was cute. And I do love a good enemies to lovers in general. I love the love letters. I think that I know they came a lot sometimes, and it was a very long portion of the book, but I was very interested in how it explored queer history, and I didn't know some of the people that they mentioned could be queer. And some of them, yes, I did know, it's been well documented that this might be the thing, but I think that just added a layer of nuance to the book that the author didn't really need to do, but she did it anyway, which I thought was very interesting. And I think that turns a lot of what we think of history on its head, because honestly, like, if you think about it, there's a percentage of the population that's always going to be LGBTQ, and it wasn't accepted back then, so they probably were, and they just hit it.
Yeah.
Right. I will say, though, if you are a gay man, this is probably, like, the best fairy tale you've ever read.
Yeah. I will say that the letters do get, like, so cheesy at a certain point that I stop enjoying them. Like, I would skim through them to get to, like, the end quote, because that was the part I liked. And that's one of my critiques of the overall portrayal of the relationship, is I felt like at a certain point they just constantly gushed about how in love they were, and there wasn't really anything else that they really talked about or interacted about. Anyway, so I also liked forced proximity. I think that's still one of my favorite tropes, is forced proximity. I don't know. I can't even think of any other tropes that were in the book now.
Miscommunication, but that's just every romance novel.
Yeah.
They didn't even miscommunicate that bad in this one.
At the beginning.
Well, yes. Okay, well, let's talk about who I want to talk about, and that is Percy, June, Nora, and Bea. Mm-hmm. Yes. I love their little triad on each side of the pond and the little supporting cast. So I love them. What did you guys think? And who was your favorite of the, what did they start calling them? The Spectacular Six or something?
Yeah. I liked Nora. I liked her because she felt a little bit more outside of things and had like a different interest. Like, she was doing all this computer science stuff, which I thought was interesting. And honestly, I thought a lot of the characters were a little one-dimensional. They felt a little typical to me. I still thought they were a good part of the book. Like, they added a lot, because I just don't think the book could have stood with just Alex and Henry. So I think they were, like, useful distractions, and also help Alex and Henry at different points in ways that I think are, like, good and believable, like Alex kind of grappling with his sexuality, and then ultimately both of them deciding if this is worth going public with, if they really feel like this is worth kind of the entanglement of politics in their lives to be living openly. And I thought that was really good. The lake house portion was like my personal favorite, because as a Texas kid, like, those like afternoons on the lake just felt like so reminiscent and nostalgic to me. And I loved them talking about like the family that they felt with each other. Of course, I always love found family. So, yeah.
Yeah, we love those lake house days. My favorites on Henry's side, it was Bea, because I think she was a unique character, where like she is, she went through the same trauma as Henry did with the loss of their father, and then being thrust into the spotlight and having to like console the British people about their dad's death. And like, I think how she reacted and like going through substance abuse issues was really interesting. And I think that added a layer to the book. And then on Alex's side, I loved Nora, because she's just like the data analyst, nerdy, dorky girl who is just like so all in on like learning and learning about data, and is kind of introverted, but also like she knows a lot. She's really, really smart, both like emotionally and intellectually. And so I really liked Nora. I'm going to say a hot take. I don't think June was needed in the book, and I think that's why they did it in the movie too. Because honestly, June was the one I had the most gripes with, because she was complaining about not being a really good journalist, when like any person could have told her in J school that if your mother is the president of the United States, you will never get to report on politics because you have a conflict of interest the size of the country. You can't report on the Democratic Party. You can't report on the Republican Party because you are the daughter of the head of the Democratic Party. So like her complaining about that and being surprised that the New York Times or the Washington Post was refusing to publish her stories and that she couldn't cover some issues. I'm like, yeah, they're covering their asses because they can't let you report on politics.
Yep.
Okay. So
also, I just want a quick note. The entitlement of thinking as a brand new journalist that the Washington Post is going to publish your articles.
Yes.
Like, I'm sorry, you can't be mad that you can't report on politics and then also shamelessly use your mom's position to, that's the only reason these outlets are talking to you. Like, get real.
So I'm going to be controversial, and I actually, June was my favorite. mostly because of her big sister vibes and how it added to the complexity of their family dynamic, and how, especially when she kind of was like, Alex, don't be mom. Like, love the people around you, enjoy the life you have. It doesn't have to be, you know, career from day one. Don't forget about us, your family, which I understand how you could do that through different characters in the movie. But I did like June for that aspect. I will give her a little grace because it sounded like she was in college before her mom got elected. So, but yeah, it's not believable, but that she'd be like, yep, I'm going to go write for the top magazine about my mom, you know, like not believable. So I get that. And I feel like we could have had a little bit more of crisis with her about, oh my gosh, I started this track when my mom was elected and my life is ruined because of it. And like dove a little deeper into that part. But overall, I liked their relationship, brother-sister bond, and how that was kind of like the one normal thing they both still had after living this life. And I'm a big sister at heart. I would do anything for my little sister, and so I liked her vibes. I will say, though, justice for Pez, because he just disappeared other than he gave Henry the teen homes at the end. I was like, Pez, where'd you go, dude? You were fun.
He just conveniently owned some homes for unhoused LGBTQ youth.
Yes.
Like, okay. But I do want to say I agree with you. Alex leans really hard into being a political kid and like a famous political kid. And I do think it was valuable that June's kind of the other side of that, where she's like, I really actually wish my mom was not the head of the Democratic Party. It like has deeply interrupted my dreams and goals that she does this. And like, you give up a lot to be the child of like one of the most important people in our democracy. And I actually wish that perspective was in the book a little more. I think we do get it from Henry just because he is born into his position and doesn't really want it, but there's nothing he can do about it. But
also, just to equate a first son or daughter with a heir to the British throne is just so unrealistic.
Equitable. It was
like, why were we doing this the whole time?
It was ridiculous to me.
Like, I was first, like, son of the U.S., you are the scum he picked off the street. You are not the first child of America. Sorry.
Yeah. And also, your parents, like, competed for that position, right? Like, your parents worked a whole career, raised a shit ton of money, convinced millions and millions of people to vote for them, to put them in that position, which is radically different than just being born into the aristocracy. Yeah. Like, I saw what they were going for, but I was still like, this is just not the same thing, however.
I'm like, yeah, I was always interested in Sasha and Malia, but not like this. Like, I just was like, oh, cool. These two girls live in the White House, you know? Like,
yeah.
Okay.
It's not quite the same as being essentially your entire life is to be the figurehead of your country and to continue on this bloodline, which is a ridiculous thing.
Speaking on behalf of your parent, the president, as if you are a party leader. No.
Yeah. No one voted for you.
Obviously, we're all American, but I was like, I'm sorry. This is the difference between having like an incredibly high stakes career that you fought tooth and nail for and being the Kardashians. Like,
yes,
it's not the same.
Well, we're kind of already talking about that, but what did you think about the families, the family dynamics? And do you view the royal family in this book a little differently after reading Spare?
Yes. Reading Spare changed, I think, how I would have reacted to this book a lot. But B, the end where they just like veto the queen and everyone's like good with it and there's like a pride parade. I was like, okay,
not happening.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We went from like romance fiction to straight up fantasy.
Yeah. And just like the mom being totally absent from the story until like the exact necessary moment. And then all of a sudden she has a backbone. I was like, and she like literally like threatens to like overthrow her mom and like get them to like Joe Biden, the Queen of England. It was
like, what, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Damn.
I will say,
to another point, reading this post 2020 and pandemic and then post 2024 election also gave this a widely different viewpoint for me. But yes, at first it felt like they were setting Henry up to be Harry. One parent tragically dies after being a movie star, a distant older brother. But also after reading Spare, I'm like, this literally can't happen. It would not have happened. That man was on lockdown. He had no choice. And you got that part right. He had no choice, but like, would not happen. Not a thing.
Right.
Yeah. No.
And it's actually. Oh, go ahead, Catherine.
It's just unbelievable. Like, I mean, I will say, because I read this before and after Spare, and crazy. Read this before and after the 2024 election as well. My vibes changed, that's for sure, but it still hit the same spot. I will say with Spare, though, that changed my vibes a lot more because I think. Yes, Henry is obviously Prince Harry. Like, that's an obvious call out.
Can we just say it? Prince Harry would be so much more interesting if he was gay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. I think offense to him and Meghan and their children, but like, he would be much more interesting publicly.
Yes, if he was also fighting on another front. Yes. I think what's interesting about the book, though, and I do think it's resolved way too quickly, is this idea of duty to country to continue on the bloodline and just kind of like keep it in the closet, keep it ignored, and marry someone just so that you can procreate. And I think that was an interesting part because I do think that there is a lot of pressure on the royal family to have babies. And I think it's quite obvious in the British media and in the British monarchy because every time a member of the royal family is pregnant, it's huge fucking news. And they follow them to the hospital and expect a photo op at the end of it. So I do think there is some interesting point that this book brings up about forcing someone into carrying on a bloodline. I think it's resolved way too quickly, though.
Yeah, it glossed over how Philip didn't want kids. Mm-hmm. And then when they're arguing with his grandma and stuff, Philip's like, someone has to carry on the bloodline, as in, like, I'm not going to. And I was like, dude, you're the number one who's supposed to do this. Like, you don't just get to shirk your duties and your brother can't. Like, that's just, it was so double-sided. I was like, either put it in or take it out, but, like, explore it more if you're going to leave it in. I don't know.
So my opinion is, like, Henry's queer crisis with his family resolved way too quickly. Mm-hmm. And Alex's was actually way more fraught than necessary. And so obviously I'm not saying that it's not still hard to tell your family no matter what their politics is. But I was just like honestly confused as to why the child of the president being queer in a democratic ticket was that big of a deal. Like,
yeah.
And I think there's modern day examples of this. Like, Joe Biden's sons are like in controversy constantly. Like, they have made a lot of bad choices and been upfront about having drug addictions and got like charged for crimes. And I'm not saying that people didn't like think of badly of that, but like, he was still elected and I don't think it impacted his election. And, Kamala Harris's daughter is like very queer coded and Tim Walz's son is disabled and it doesn't like no one really cares. Like someone might comment on that, but like
I think
the voters only... who care that you're gay are not voting for a Democrat.
No.
So yeah, I think it all came down to the unrealistic ending where they win Texas.
Yeah.
And I think had Texas, their home state, been a swing state, yeah, maybe it would have made a little more of a difference because, oh, Now they're definitely not a traditional family because they're biracial, they're divorced, and their kid's gay. So, like, yeah, maybe. But realistically, no one's ever, you're not winning Texas, Democrats. I'm sorry. I would be fascinated if that were the case. But in this current political climate, which the book is written in, they're not winning Texas. And so really, Alex, doesn't matter if you're gay.
And also, those voters were already turned off by the fact that you live in a biracial family and are divorced.
Right.
Like,
the only reason he got Texas is because the other dude went after a Texas boy, and Texans are vengeful.
That was more believable than
that. Yeah, I was like, yeah, that one is believable.
I think it brings, so it's obviously a fantasy book, obviously, when it comes to that stuff. I will say, though, it touches on a point, and it's kind of like a gaping wound in the Democratic Party, because, like, working in news in Texas and the lead up to the 2024 election, literally every news person said this: Texas turning blue is the Democrats' white whale. Yep. It is their white whale. They will continue to talk about it till the end of time, hoping for Texas to finally turn blue, because they look at the demographics or they look at some sort of statistical line and say it's
possible.
The
gerrymandering is a good point that he brought up. And then,
yeah,
he wants to change the lines they're drawn by being a lawyer. But, like, well, that's a big state to fix gerrymandering
in. Yeah. And also, they don't just, like, hand out who gets to draw them. Like, you sue, and then the courts say you have to redraw them, and Republicans still get to redraw them.
Also, you're not going to become a lawyer, fix that, and then run for Congress. Those two things don't happen in the same lifetime.
Yeah.
You got to pick one of those, buddy. You're not doing them both simultaneously.
So dark. So
big
dark.
Goals.
I didn't knock the author for this, because, Catherine, you're right. There was a time, especially before this past election, where Democrats, like, really felt they could get Texas. And that was, like, a huge, like, dream they were selling, which is actually funny because I've reported a lot on this, like, just as my personal job. And the fact that, no, Texas is not turning blue at all is, like, actually, like, my job, just to, like, tell that story. And so it was funny to me. But it has aged particularly badly because of, like, the political trajectory of the country. And so what was once sort of like a hopeful tale of the future now just feels like almost just like mockingly off point.
It did. It absolutely was like salt in a wound. And when they were like, Pennsylvania is blue, I was like, well, in 2020, it sure was. In 2024, it sure was not.
Yeah,
it definitely. If you're a political junkie, this book may not be for you, because this is taking. Yeah, it's taking wild takes.
Also, the fact that they thought Alaska mattered in the Electoral College. I'm sorry, Alaska, you literally don't matter in the
Electoral College. No one pays attention to Alaska. No.
On election day.
What?
Yes. On election day, the states that they were paying attention to, I was like, I would love to read whatever article this author wrote that told her these are going to be the states to watch, because, like, they are not.
Have you watched Anderson Cooper before?
Yeah. Just look up Steve Kornacki and have him break it down for you.
Right.
Khaki Kornacki.
Khaki Kornacki. Right.
Here's our, like, poli-sci major journalism backgrounds coming out for you, as we were just more enraged about the portrayal of the Electoral College.
If you can separate fact from fiction, then this book is great.
If we're going that this book's full fantasy fiction, fine, sure.
Yeah, this is basically a mythical version
also
of America,
the fact that they would think they were losing when the West Coast hadn't come in yet. They knew they were getting California.
Yeah, I was silly. Like, what are you talking about? Know, this is the one place that's in the bag. Like, girl.
I know. Anyway, some of us don't think the way we think on election nights.
But. I know. Some people are lucky enough to just be so much more, like, politically unplugged. Okay, so our last question, obviously we're referencing this, like, fantastical ending where the crown gets behind Henry, he's gay, they don't care. America and the world come out for Alex and Henry and their relationship after all this hand-wringing. And then it's on election night and it's super close and she wins because Texas flips. Which, by the way, I know we've already... My sister is behind me laughing. I know we've already gone in on this point a lot, but also if all those other swing states went red, Texas is not going to be the only quote unquote swing state that goes blue. These things happen like as a collective political movement. Like, you can't lose every other swing state and then just win Texas. It's just ridiculous. But anyway, so there's this fantastical, like, beautiful, picture perfect, everything in the world works out, and like photo finish. What did you guys think of just this like grandiose ending?
I mean, I liked the idea of him holding a key and his keychain around his neck the entire time to like remind him of home. Like, it's from his childhood home that they hadn't been to in a while, because like, obviously when you become president of the United States, you're not really allowed to do those kind of things. You're not allowed to drive. You're not allowed to kind of like go and just hang out at your home. I liked that kind of coming around full circle at the end where he takes Henry to his childhood home. It felt a little abrupt just to end on election night after kind of that whirlwind of election stuff. I understand there wasn't much else to say, but at the same time, I was just kind of like, this feels like an endorphin high that doesn't sustain. Like, you're just like, it out. So, I mean, I love that it was in Austin that her election party was. That's fun.
I do. So first, the fact that he was like, oh, mom knows someone at NYU Law. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Anyway, happily ever after in New York, I guess. The prince, they'd never let him do that. We saw what a big freaking deal it was when Harry came to California. Like, it's not, that's not how that works if he's maintaining his royal duties. But anyway, I also want to ask about Rafael Luna, who was a big part of the ending.
Sorry. That was a crazy plot twist. That
first of all, would never ever happen. You'd be out of politics so fast.
So unnecessary. And
also, he's an independent, which is crazy.
Yes. An independent.
Colorado.
From Colorado. Yeah. I was like, girl, please.
Oh, a gay God. Independent man from Colorado supporting the Republican side to be a covert operative.
Voted out.
Yeah.
Right. People would have called for his head like so fast, and he would have had no staying power whatsoever. Like no power to do anything.
Also, the guy who tried to sexually abuse you is just like, oh yeah, this guy wants to be on my team now.
Yeah, in no way is, if they had left out the entire abuse thing, okay, maybe. But in no way is a victim of abuse going to willingly join that person's team like that.
Yeah. Just be around them now, be seen as an ally to them on the world stage. Just so what?
Hey, remember when I was your intern and we had a lot of fun? Can I join your team? Like, no.
Yeah,
it was ridiculous. That is your abuser. You're probably not going to go work for them, even if it means you're helping the other side. Like, that's not how that works.
And then not telling the other side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, how could you not do that work from outside his team? Like, you think you're really better positioned to find out about abuse, like, within the team? Like, you are a part of the team now. They're not going to confide in you. You are better off being a, like, safe place to land, following up with people who leave, like,
it
the way journalists
do. It would have
been
better to share his own story.
Yes.
Yeah. Or just decide if you want to be public about what happened to you. It was just...
But he just leaks all the emails to Nora for his bestie, Alex. I'm like, no. And also, Alex would not be walking into that man's office all the time, even if he worked for him forever.
No.
Yeah.
But...
I mean, I will say, it was believable that the Republican candidate was trying to hack an email server.
Yes.
Okay, politics is fucking dirty.
Was believable.
Politics
was believable.
In general.
Yeah, both sides do it. Both sides do it. They espionage. They have dossiers on each
side. The royals
side
probably
of all
do
of their
it
shit.
Too. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
So that was believable.
The one believable thing.
I just feel like that got so chaotic at the end with that realization on top of the sex scandal, on top of the election, and then it just ended. I was like, okay.
Oh, and also, by the way, they're not going to explain to the public what the fuck happened with Rafael Luna. They're just all of a sudden besties again. Like, that's not suspicious.
He confirmed it to the journalist so he can stay anonymous.
No.
No.
I will say with, I'm glad that they didn't do the route of that the Republican candidate, whose name I cannot remember for the goddamn life of me.
Richard or something.
Richards. Sure. Yes. He was doing the whole thing so that he could do an email server thing. It's because, like, at first I thought he was just doing it because he wanted to be anti-LGBTQ and just be like, she has a gay son. I'm like, well, that wouldn't be very politically salient. But to do it to say, like, look, this is so easy to hack into the emails of the White House. What other things are on this email server?
Well, and that's believable. They're telling secrets the public can't know about, whatever.
Yeah, that I'm glad that the author took that route and not the, like, oh, he's gay. No.
Right.
I mean, he could have just taken the, oh my gosh, he's dallying with the Prince of England. That was enough right there.
Yeah.
Secret love affair with our overseas allies.
At least it's not our enemies.
I know. Also, it was like, it is a romance between, like, if you had to pick another country, right? Surely that's the one that we'd all prefer. That's like our freaking bestie.
It's our father.
Our father. All right. Anyway, I think that's our discussion. Do you guys have book recommendations?
I'm going to say it before Casey can say it. Aristotle and Dante.
No. Yeah, that's a good one.
Oh, man, I don't know. Any rom-com ever?
Emily Henry?
No, she writes realistic stories. That can happen. They're like perfectly realistic, but they could happen.
I do. Okay, I think I'm going to pick 7 Days in June, which is one of the, like, romances that I've, like, enjoyed the most. And the reason is, while it's not, like, super rom-com-y, it's has that sort of, like, unbelievability to it. Like, especially towards the end, it kind of becomes, like, more and more idealized. And it's a super emotional book. I think if I had to go with a rom-com, I would go with Book Lovers because it's a rom-com that I just liked more.
Okay, looking through the list, I'm going to go with Cemetery Boys, another little queer romance that's way cute, but it's also unrealistic because it involves a ghost. And it's also in the Latinx community, so.
True. Okay, well. These are just our opinions. We hope you like listening to our opinions. We also hope you have your own, and feel free to tell us about those opinions online, pretty much everywhere at Busy Girls Pod. If you want more info about the podcast, we're at busygirlspod.com. You can check out our past book recommendations and get some more info on our past episodes there. And yeah, rate and review the podcast 5 stars, please. I'm Casey.
I'm Catherine.
And I'm Caitlin. Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.